ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is my good friend and two-time recording artist, Mr. Spencer Williams.
I refuse to elaborate on that.
And also with us, we also have intern Sarah.
Hello, yeah. I'm back.
Apparently, we employ children.
Okay, wow.
There we go. We have a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the recently dropped and much anticipated video game adaptation, and that is Markiplier's Iron Lung. So stick around as we dive into that and get into all the nitty-bitty. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us them opening credits?
Tune in to brand new episodes each and every week. Now on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website, filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
That's right. We got a website. If you head on over to filmlosopherspodcast.com, there we got allegedly over 300 episodes. Everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophersspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming. And that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers and listen in. Tell us what you think. Did you like the movie? Did you not like the movie? What are you hoping to see for 2026? We'd love to hear your thoughts, so drop us your thoughts in the tile section down below. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
Yeah. Yes, we have.
We got so much more, and we'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. We are well within our way to 2026. And need I say, so much has happened. So many things are going on. And honestly, it is kind of getting a little tiring to catch up. I don't know if you guys are feeling the fatigue yet for 2026, but I'm already ready for 2027.
I'm ready to request a refund for my year.
So far already?
Yeah, I want it back.
He's like, can I get a refund for this year? And then if you can, toss in last year too. It's been an interesting year, to say the least. But I think one of the great things about 2026 is, one of the things I look forward to at least, is the opportunity to kind of plan and schedule how we do the year to come. Just a little look, and I think we've mentioned this previously in other episodes, a kind of peel back behind the curtain, if you will, is when we come into the new year, first thing we do for, right after New Year's Day is we typically use that first Saturday or first Sunday as our official first Filmlosophers meeting.
Planning day.
It's our planning day, but it involves pancakes, eggs, bacon, all the wonderfulness. That's right. It is a breakfast meeting.
It's the best kind of meeting.
It really is. It really is. We typically go to an IHOP nearby, and myself, Spencer, and managing intern manager Amy usually comes along, and we discuss the year to come. Hopefully, as we continue on with the years to go, maybe intern Sarah can make one.
Yay!
If she's still employed by us. Okay. But again, one of the highlights for the year that is to come is usually that planning opportunity, getting a chance to actually schedule out what we already know, what's going to happen, and kind of looking on the horizon for things that may even be hidden gems along the way. But one of those things that wasn't planned is an opportunity that we're maybe looking at, and I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on, because managing intern Amy mentioned to me the other day, she said that she was watching Prince of Egypt, and she said we need to do an animated epic episode. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it made me wonder, like, what is considered technically an animated epic? Like, because yes, Prince of Egypt, it's an old school biblical proportion kind of story. So obviously that's a story of epic proportions. You know, that makes a lot more sense. But then I think, like, what are other animated films that are considered epics? Like, in my opinion, I would say, like, The Land Before Time is an epic. But then I told you that, and I immediately regretted saying it because I looked at your face, and I'm like, well, maybe not. So I was like, let me rethink my life choices. I don't know. Like, what do you think would classify Spence as a animated epic movie?
Well, I guess we need to define what an epic is. Because honestly, when you say epic, the first thing I think of are like movies from the 50s, like, you know, The Ten Commandments or like Ben-Hur or something to that effect. And so it makes sense why Prince of Egypt would be, because it fits in with that.
But see, in my opinion, I would say if you're thinking epics, I would say like Lord of the Rings is an epic. Like, even to an extent, like Flash Gordon is an epic.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No.
Flash.
It has fantastic music and that's it.
I mean, come on.
What do you mean, come on?
It was a great movie.
No, it was not.
We need to see this movie
I refuse.
Oh, we are absolutely going to see this movie now. We have to see this movie now. Happening. We are so going to see this movie now. You shake your head, but it's saying yes on the episode.
Oh, yeah. It's not. I will have disappeared.
What are you raising your hand for?
Oh, no, I pulled up the literal dictionary definition.
Ask a question and be like, why are you talking?
What is going on over there?
Well, I pulled up the actual definition of epic, like in like the dictionary, which is a long poem typically depict one derived from ancient oral tradition, narrating the deeds and actions of heroic or legendary figures or of history of a nation.
Interesting.
So
basically, Lord of the Rings was correct. It falls under an epic. It's also the hero's journey.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of defined, in my opinion. Okay, it seems almost self-explanatory as far as like epic for me.
Is it?
Well, again, for me, but then my definition of it seems different than yours. Mm. You say epic and you're like, you know, black and white or Ben-Hur, Charlton Heston needs to be somebody who's probably no longer alive.
Which also fit the definition she gave.
True, but then I also think Lord of the Rings, I think movies like Hercules, you know, the animated movie.
Which is also technically already an epic because of what her definition, Greek. Plus it's based on previous Greek stuff, yeah.
So, okay, what then would you say is your personal top three animated epics? Well, or actually, not so much animated, let's say at least one or two of them be animated and you had another one that wasn't, if you're running short on options.
Of course I am, because it's the Prince of Egypt and it's Spencer, Hercules, yes. And it's because they have fantastic musical scores.
Okay. What's your third one?
I don't have one.
Ah, say Spencer. What about you, Sarah?
I'm currently looking through.
I see that you're because she's literally just like, ChatGPT, give me three animated.
No, I do not support ChatGPT. I actually look at the sources. I would count Kung Fu Panda 3. And the thing is, I'm trying to think of like actual clear, like to fall within the guidelines of the definition that I just read.
Right.
Because like it'd be, no. So figured one out. Wreck-It Ralph.
Mm. I don't know if that falls under epic though. Like, I mean, there's a difference between a story of one person and then a story that fits an epic. And again, this is where like the defining, like, aspect of it comes into play. Like if I think of epic, animated epic, I would say, I was talking about it a little bit ago before we went on the air. The 2007 Beowulf movie is an epic to me. And it fits both your statement of belief over here, Mr. Spencer, and then Sarah's like deliberate, you know, what's it on Webster definition over there on her phone. I think it fits both of those. Like, I think if I were to pick, it would be Beowulf. It would be, who did I have for my second one? I had someone in mind. Drawing a blank. I would almost say Santa Claus the movie, but no, I'm not saying that. Don't.
I mean, you could probably.
No, you couldn't.
That.
No.
It's based on folklore.
No,
it
it's
takes
not.
Place over it's thousands of years.
It's a Coca-Cola commercial. Let's
not
get
that.
It right.
No.
Yes, it is 100% a Coca-Cola commercial. But I think that is something that we can definitely look more into, because I really do feel like there are movies that have stood the test of time, whether in telling the story or in the ability to translate a story. Because just because it's not always, just because it's not done well doesn't mean it's not considered an epic. Like, you take a look at Watership Down. Mm-hmm. Now, again, aside from epics, Watership Down is an animated film that not a lot of people like revisiting. Mm-hmm. For good reason. Same thing like Grave of the Fireflies.
Ugh, mm-hmm. Ugh.
Grave of the Fireflies, although is not a movie that you want to revisit, I would say everybody should at least see it once for the grand scale of what that movie translates.
If you're in a great headspace, yes.
Yeah, true. Very true. Very true.
Don't let that be the thing that tees you off the edge, please.
What do you...
Oh, I was counting Mr. movies. Oh, no, Mr. I was Claw counting how... like, I was Dr. falling Claw. Under the... what's the one that you brought up? Brought up off air, Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh yeah, that's another good one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have my three. I have what I consider an epic.
She Puss used Boots. Gemini in this one.
So I did okay. not. Please stop making the assumption that I would support AI. Puss in Boots: Last Wish, Moana, and then where did my last one go?
She's Kubo literally looking string. At a full catalog of movies over there.
What did you say?
Kubo and the Last String.
Okay.
And the Two String?
It's Three String. Two Strings. Two. You're correct.
I was like, wait, what are you trying to say?
I thought it was three.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
I want to know if this movie is considered an epic.
Oh, boy.
Megalopolis.
Because
I feel like it kind of...
It kind of should fits, be? But it shouldn't. Like, Megalopolis is the type of movie you make when you were first expected to make a Calvin Klein commercial, but you kept the cameras rolling. And, like, the Johnny Depp-esque character who's got the hat and the glasses in the middle of the desert, you know, communing with wolves kind of thing, they let it go on for far too long. And that movie is like, I'm not one to condone, neither am I to condemn, but I'm not one to condone just random substance usage. But if ever there was a movie for somebody to watch while taking said substances, mm-hmm. Megalopolis is the way to go. Because there are some scenes in that movie that you're just like, you'd have to be on something to find enjoyment. We were not on anything, and we had a rough time.
That was rough.
But the two guys that were sitting right in front of us who were schnitzeled out of their mind... We're having a grand time.
I was kind of mad at them.
Yeah, for having a much better time than
yes.
you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
What?
Because you brought it up for our 2025 recap, would Predator Killer of Killers count as an epic?
No, because that's multiple stories in one singular kind of anthology.
Okay.
Even though they do convene in the tail end of it, I don't think it's really accounting for one person's journey. Unless you're accounting for just the Predator's journey, but then you only have that towards it. Yeah, I don't really think so.
Counter one, Book of Life.
I would say probably, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's going to be people who would complain that it shouldn't, but it probably fits within the narrative. I think it does fit, so. But yeah, I mean, we'll figure out what really works best with this particular, idea, and we'll kind of figure out how to compile a list and see if we can make an episode out of it. 'Cause that'd be fun. So, but that does bring us to our conversation of the evening. And that is our take on Markiplier, AKA Mark Fishbach's directorial feature film debut in Iron Lung. This movie had a very interesting release time frame and was in theaters for only a short amount of time, although some theaters did extend the release to a few more days because of the mass amount of ticket purchases that were still occurring. So needless to say, we got a chance to check it out, and we are excited to talk about it. Excuse me. So without further ado, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis? Goodness.
Set in a post-apocalyptic future where an event known as the Quiet Rapture caused all known stars and habitable plants in the universe to disappear, a convict is sent to search an ocean of blood discovered on a desolate moon using a small submarine nicknamed the Iron Lung.
Written and directed by Markiplier, again, whose real name is Mark Fishbach, in his feature directorial debut and based on the 2022 video game by David Szymanski, the film stars Fishbach, Caroline Rose Kaplan, Troy Baker, Elsie Lovelock, Elle Lamont, Sean McLaughlin, and Isaac McKee. A couple key pieces about the movie. Within less than a week of its official trailer releasing and ticket sales launching, the number of theaters playing the film expanded from 60 to over 1,500 plus theaters with the help of fans, as well as major theater chains including AMC, Regal, and Cinemark. I didn't get a chance to ask you this, Spence, before we went on air. Which theater did you go see it at? Like, was it an AMC? Was it a Cinemark?
Cinemark currently because it got the expansion. Mm-hmm. But previously, before that happened, it was only in the 50. The closest one was San Ramon, which is quite a ways away. It's like 80 miles from here.
Spencer, but I was really gonna see it.
I mean, Spencer was sold out for this movie. Another key piece of information about this movie: the movie holds the world record for most fake blood used in a movie, approximately 80,000 gallons, beating Evil Dead from 2013's 70,000. I think we had mentioned this, but the fact that you're using 80,000 gallons, even though I say just 70,000, that's still
an insane amount.
That's a lot. I mean, I'm pretty sure. Where's the intern? Intern, how many gallons does a tankard hold? Like one of those oil tankers?
Let me research.
Because
it.
I'm assuming.
What, an oil tanker?
Well, because aren't those the ones that travel by truck?
Maybe.
Oh, I thought you meant like the shipping container.
An LR1 tanker can hold between 345,000 barrels and 615 barrels of gallons.
Looks like.
I just Googled. Oh. It's not from Gemini or anything.
I mean, if you're Googling, I figure there was a picture.
Larger tankers average 5,500 to 11,600.
Oh, she said 500.
U.S. gallons for lighter weight products versus smaller tankers, which average 3,000 to 5,400 gallons for heavier products.
Hmm. Well, one of the gas tanker trucks, those ones that I was thinking of, those hold between 5,500 and 11,000 gallons. Hmm. So if we say roughly one of those bad boys carries 10,000 gallons, it took 8 of those filled with fake blood to do this movie.
The rig that they used in the movie, like dry without the blood, Amy and Mark said was like roughly around 9,000 pounds, like dry without the blood. So I don't know how much it would have weighed. Like,
man.
Yeah.
Last but not least, the story of SCP-354, which is called the Blood Lake from the official SCP wiki site, is what originally inspired the game, which inspired the movie. So if you don't know, there is a creepypasta set of stories that is based around the SCP Foundation, and the SCP Foundation is called Special Containment Procedures. And these creepypastas have pretty much birthed not only tons of stories, but also a lot of other video games and other properties that people have taken inspiration from and built upon it. And so this is apparently one of the many that spurned the game, like I said, that spurned ultimately inspiration for this movie. Is there a specific series? I'm looking at you, Spence, sorry. Isn't there a specific series that is just focused on the SCP story element?
I do not know.
Huh. I just thought there was. But either way, the fact is like, if you actually go online, you can look up the entire SCP wiki page and find all of these stories there. And like I said, specifically for this one, it's SCP-354. So, real quick, obviously we're going to get into the nitty gritty. This movie has been one that we all have been waiting for, as we are all diehard fans of Markiplier and his work. And so we are going to get into all that info. So you are warned, there may be some spoilers. So be warned. Spoiler alert. So let's kind of talk about first, before we dive in, I kind of want to talk about Markiplier. Obviously, he is somebody that we've all been accustomed to as far as like our YouTube viewing. Spencer, I believe you're an avid watcher of his work.
Yep.
Sarah?
Yes, I am too.
And as well as myself. I think between the two of us, between the three of us, actually, we've all been watching pretty close to his original air date, like when he first started, roughly.
Because I think he started in like 2011 or so. And I feel like I didn't join on to like late 2013, 2014.
Yeah, give or take. But it's still, I mean, it was a lot closer to then to where it is now.
I guess that's right. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I'm trying to give you credibility and you're like, nope, I'm not that. I'm not there. Nope, you can't.
I wasn't there on day one.
But I think one of the biggest things that a lot of people can say about Markiplier is that his, as much as his content and his production value has improved, he still carries that same heart from when he first began. Mind you, he's not doing as many, like, you know, a lot of the more emotional type video. Although as of late, with a lot of the things pertaining to this film, he's been uber emotional,
makes sense.
Yeah, rightly so, obviously. But what I want to know is, I want to know, what is a key or core memory you guys have with being a fan of Markiplier, whether if it's watching something, seeing him somewhere, or whatever. Like, what is something that you remember most about, you know, either some of his Let's Plays or, you know, his Try Not to Laughs or his Rage Quits or his... Because, I mean, the great thing about Markiplier is that he's known for all of these things.
Yeah.
And
he's a wild man.
He is great, a wild man. So what about you, Sarah?
Some of my core memories with Markiplier has been mainly his FNAF stuff, but... the playthrough of The Last of Us, and then some of his like Choose Your Own Adventure YouTube originals that he's brought to life. Like the first one I actually watched was the In Space with Markiplier series, because that was great.
That was the first one you watched?
Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't really like it wasn't a lack of me being like, I don't really want to like watch it. I wasn't aware that a heist with Markiplier like existed. I was just like, oh. I'm like, it takes place in space. I like Markiplier. Let me see what's going on. And then also it's the community that he has, that of supporting each other and him giving to them, that kind of drew me into like want to watch more of his like Choose Your Own Adventure stuff. What about you, Spencer?
Okay. So I remember being just hyped for a heist with Markiplier, because like I had to work that day and I was waiting for it to release. I still was like, no one's needing my help right now. So I was still clicking through it. But like, you know, that's why this guy is so cool to me, is that like, you know, Heist and In Space were both Choose Your Own Adventures on YouTube, which is not really something I've seen many people do.
Yeah.
Which is super creative. And that's kind of why I like him. Like, he comes across as a very genuine guy. And he's super creative. So he's always doing something interesting.
Yeah. I think for me, like, some of my core memories with Markiplier have got to be a lot of his, I remember his milestone videos. Like, I think if there was one that really stuck out to me, it was him watching his milestone videos of when he hit like his first million and then 2 million and then 3 million. Because I don't know what he's up to right now. What's his follow?
35.
He's currently at 38.3 million subscribers.
So he's up there. Oh. But like, I remember when he hit his first million, then when he hit his first, like the first 5 million, and then like, but they were doing these videos for him and thanking him, and they were like compilation videos, and like he was genuinely heartfelt thankful, like, for everything. And it still shows, and it's weird because, like, you look at those videos, and he still has them on his page. Mm-hmm. You look at those videos, and then you look at where he's at now and how he is now, and he's still the same person. Like, the genuine character of the man still resides within the persona that he portrays every time he's on air.
Okay, that's true. I do agree with that. But I also feel like he's also gotten, like, into a current phase of old man Markiplier.
Yes.
Because, like, there is a very stark contrast if you throw on, like, a 2013 versus, like, a recent one.
Yeah.
Like, I know anyone's going to look older over that time frame, but, like, you can tell that he is, like, mellowed out a little bit.
I mean, he doesn't rage quit as much, thankfully.
He was playing Getting Over It, and that was just notorious for being exceedingly stupidly difficult.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where most people pull their Markiplier rage quit compilation videos from.
Yeah. He broke a chair. That's what the first episode is called. I literally broke a chair.
And then the ones where he broke his controllers for playing I Am Bread. I mean, it's
That was funny because it started off with him being joke angry, but then he got real angry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I think that's the thing, like, you have to be appreciative of for somebody who's willing to be that vulnerable. Mm. And even if it was a learning phase for him to recognize, okay, I can't possibly, like, I can be angry, but I can't be that angry. Yeah. But I mean, all of that, you know, experience and time, It only grew Markiplier to become this guy that we see now, who's, as Spencer quotes, it's old man Markiplier, like over here doing old man Logan.
oh my god!
And it's given him an opportunity to hone his creative, you know, craft to be able to do things like the film we're reviewing today, which is, you know, Iron Lung. And so let's talk about first impressions. We all got a chance to go see the movie. Now, actually, let's talk expectations for the movie. What were some of your guys' thoughts going into it? Because I know for myself, I had to rewatch the initial playthrough because I completely forgot everything about that original playthrough when it first aired. Mm. And he did it back when the game released.
Yep.
So, yeah, I didn't really recall where that story was going to go. And I'm ADHD. I need some kind of grounding. Like, I needed to have some semblance in what was to be expected. What about you, sir?
For me, my expectations were because of his previous, like, endeavors and aforementioned the YouTube originals of In Space with Markiplier and Heist with Markiplier. My expectations were just like, I trust whatever he's going to go into, like, without, because
so you didn't see the playthroughs, is what you're saying.
I didn't rewatch the playthrough before. Yes. Sure. I'm like, my train of thought was just like, I'm really excited. Like, I was really excited to see the movie. I didn't watch the playthrough again because I had faith in, like, him as a storyteller and as a creative person. What he would put out would not flop.
So you're more kind of in line with the cinematic approach to Markiplier as opposed to the Let's Play approach to Markiplier.
Which is really weird because I'm normally opposite. Like, I'd like to make sure I have that.
You are really weird, but it's okay. No, what about you, Spence?
Okay, so I did not watch the playthrough before seeing this movie. I was like, let me just, take the movie in first and see if it stands by itself, because I kind of assumed you had seen the playthrough originally. Uh-huh.
You had seen it at one point in time. You just didn't. Oh, you hadn't seen it at all.
Nope. Oh, not till after.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you just saw the playthrough?
Yeah. After I saw the movie, because I basically wanted to make sure that he was doing a good, because this is an adaptation of a video game.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that it's not one of those things where it's like, well, I had, like, foreknowledge of something, and that's why this whole part makes sense.
Yeah, but, like, I recall, like, again, this was one of the few things I did recall, and I remembered when I first saw it, there wasn't a lot to the game. Like,
So if you saw the first video, you're correct.
Yes.
But then they came back and added a whole bunch of lore after that.
So when did you see that?
I saw them all at the same time after I saw this movie.
After you saw the movie. Okay, yes. Okay. So after talking about expectations, let's go ahead and talk about first impressions. And we're going to start with, we all saw the film, got out of the film, and let's start with Sarah. What were your first impressions?
I would like to start this off with, there was a movie attendant.
She's going to give us a poem. Hold on.
No, there once was a movie attendant who was at the concession stand and decided to take up a lot of my time trying to get straight to the movie and decided to try to gatekeep the movie and be like, you wouldn't understand if you haven't played the game. And I lied through my teeth and said, I've played the game. I've seen the playthroughs. And my first impression after leaving the theaters was that attendant was wrong and we should not be gatekeeping things. But my expectations going into were proven right. And I was really happy to see the execution of this film and also watch and kind of experience the love that was poured into it and the care and consideration that was just a labor of love. And knowing that Mark worked alongside and like had on dial the creator of the game made me really happy, because it's also a, like, when you're a creator and you have someone like basically you're passing the baby over to the person. It's really important that, like, you know, the person doesn't drop the baby, but you have faith and trust in the person that they'll take care of it.
I really love this baby analogy.
We were watching.
Don't drop the baby.
We were watching Corridor Crew interview the directors of K-pop Demon Hunters, and they were talking about like the process of like getting it through production and getting all this.
Yeah,
like,
but you're taking it to a more literal sense, like, and then you're like, apparently your baby, your baby's like an egg or something. It's like a high school project or something.
I mean, people are really protective of their projects and making sure
their people are also protective of their babies, but they don't treat them like, oh, I'm going to give them to you, but just don't drop them. Okay. Like, it's kind of implied that you don't drop babies. Well, unless Sarah, you drop babies.
I was dropped as a child, so never mind.
Okay. Spencer.
Anyway,
I didn't even say anything on that one. I'm just passing it. Spencer, go before I say something that'll hurt me.
So what I was going to say is, Sarah, I feel like I ran into that same attendant that you were talking about.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, because like he started talking and I was just like, I just like tune out. I can't hear you anymore.
I want my popcorn and let me be. Please.
Yeah, I was getting whatever I was getting. I think it was a slushy. But I just like sped it through that checkout because I was like, nope, absolutely not. But I think, sorry, one more. Going into this movie, I was very used to Mark in his comedic, like, you know, roles. Yeah. Like, that's what he's done. This was not that. And so I was a bit concerned on how well he could do in a more serious toned movie. And mostly I did not want to come on here to bash him because I like him, but I will still give like an actual honest. Yeah, but I don't want to spend an hour doing like that, you know. So flash forward to after the movie, I was like, yay, it works. That's the best news. Like, it's good and it works. And I was very happy with that. Also, I saw this at 11 p.m. to try to help him beat Sam Raimi. It didn't work, but it was still an attempt.
It was close. It was close. As far as myself is concerned, I again, maybe every attendant at every theater was the same, because I'm pretty sure I experienced one as
well.
What
if it's the same guy?
And he just and he works at all these different movie theaters clear across town. He's just a plant set there by the studio.
No, so
just,
no, it's a Nurse Joy type of thing. It's siblings.
They're a bunch of cousins and they all look the same.
No, I feel like it has to be studio plants who are just like, we got to make sure this movie goes down.
Movie flops.
It's got to go down.
Oh, you got to see Send Help by Sam Raimi? It's great.
What do you mean you're seeing Aang Long? You haven't even played the game. Why would you ever watch that movie?
He's such a poser.
Oh my God. It's like enact Project Chad. So he's but I think the biggest thing for me is the same concern you had, Spence. Mm. I've only known Markiplier to be mostly comedic. Mm. Yes, I did mention that one of my core memories of him was him being emotional, and you know, kind of, you know, in crying at times and so forth, but because it was highly emotional moments. But those are very, very, very few and far between now. And I'm more accustomed to like the distractible podcast crew or him just being ridiculous on any of his videos or him talking to Lixian. Like you expect Mark to always come out with a joke, even when a moment now, like more recent, even if there's a moment where it's like the situation may cause for somebody to typically be more emotional, he's either not engaging with it as much or he's like, it's like, oh, okay, cool.
Old like, man.
Like, did you guys watch his Doom playthrough?
No.
One of the more recent Doom iterations, one of the developers put a book in there that I think either was written by his father or was about his father. And I think his father had recently passed that point in time. Mm. And they put it in there and they had mentioned to him that he should pay close attention to it. And when he went, he saw the book. He's like, oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, that's really great. Like,
that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You were making it sound like it was super recent. I was like, oh.
Well, it's at least 4 years ago, maybe more. I don't know. It hasn't been that long. You are the researcher for the show.
But right now I'm in the moment. I'm in the moment, Tossin.
Your job is to be the researcher. So. but I think when he did that moment, like it kind of surprised me that it wasn't as emotional. It was almost like the pivot point to recognize like he's just more focused on not delving so much into those emotions for himself and maybe for his own personal mental health that it would make sense. But I say all that to say, like, I'm just more accustomed to his comedy. I'm more accustomed to him being comical, being silly, being ridiculous.
6 years ago.
See, so it wasn't that long ago. Yeah,
6 years ago is a while ago.
Spencer.
That's a whole toddler.
Spencer. That's a whole toddler. you call 6 year olds toddlers.
They essentially are.
So again, going into this movie, I expected there to be at least a few moments where he either breaks the fourth wall, he does something silly or ridiculous for the sake of trying to break the tension of a moment. And I was hoping that wasn't the case. I was expecting it, but I was also hoping against it, if that makes any sense.
Like him bringing in jokes from his playthrough?
Yeah, like bringing in jokes from his playthrough, because he said quite a few things during his playthrough that were kind of funny. And again, the game isn't all that serious. The original game, like the base game, isn't all that serious. It's got tones of seriousness, but as like a pixelated, you know, type of enclosure kind of game, there's not much you can do with that. So are we on expectations or first impressions?
We're first impressions leaving the theater.
So leaving the theater, I was super excited that he was much more tapped within his like theatrical side and his ability to just really hone in onto being somebody that needed to be for this particular role. And truly, I don't know how he was able to do it, but he was able to pull it off. And this kind of does bring us into that first, you know, section of our conversation, which is like performers. And obviously there's Mark is primarily the only actor on screen. Mm-hmm. But there is a vague appearance of Caroline Kaplan, who plays a woman named Ava. She is the person that you see through the porthole for like maybe 3 minutes, 4 minutes, but you hear her voice consistently over the intercom. The other voice that you hear on occasion is Troy Baker, who plays David, another person that works with Ava. But if we're talking about performances, the single performer that is in this movie throughout the entirety of it is Mark. And when I say that to watch him be serious for how long was this movie?
It is 2 hours, 5 minutes.
For 2 hours and 5 minutes, which maybe 2 hours of it is probably the movie and the 5 minutes is end credits. Hmm. But for like 2 hours to watch Markiplier be serious and wait for him to break, like it's almost like it's going to come. That's like the worst drinking game in the world because he never does break. And I got to give him credit for it. Like, I don't know what he did to maintain that level of like intensity, but he nails it.
Yeah.
Like without a doubt.
Yeah, I agree. That was also part of like my expectations was because I saw in Space with Markiplier, I knew he was able to bring that like high emotional and seriousness with how going down, like depending upon which route you went for being on the space station with him, you will either get like a, okay, ha ha ha, or you'll get like a strong emotional scene where, no spoilers, but like he's like crying in front of you. Like, and that was part of like, for him as a performer, I was just like, I know you got this, continue to wow and amaze me. Like, did an amazing job.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with like, I feel like In Space is like the thing that you would go to for anything that was semi-serious prior to this movie. And while he could definitely do it in like, you know, short bursts, the thing was, I was like, can you do it for hours?
For 2 hours.
So like, but yeah, he pulled it off. He knocked it out of the park.
How long is In Space with Markiplier?
That's really hard to say because there's no like a full runtime. Because you're going through different paths. So it really depends on like how long. I don't know what the total playtime of all the videos are because some of that includes like some behind the scenes stuff.
It says 4 hours and 15 minutes for part one.
Yeah, it was a two part video.
And part two is 1 hour and 10 minutes.
That's dramatically shorter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Guess they funneled it all down to one track.
Something. Yeah, you got to give it to him for everything that he's done as far as a performer, as far as an entertainer is concerned. Like, I honestly don't feel like this movie would have the same heart and intentionality if it was somebody else in the role for this movie. Like, Markiplier is one of those particular people, like we stated, is very intentional, is very personable. And it always seems like whatever he puts his hands to, he's going to do it with all his heart, even if he jokes about it or has fun with it. This movie felt like he committed to the role to the absolute fullest. And he nailed it.
Yeah.
Talking about the story, Again, I only saw the original playthrough, and there wasn't a lot of story development in that original playthrough. Now, you said you saw the lore update.
Yeah.
So what, as far as comparison to this movie, what things did they get right and what things did they kind of deviate from?
Okay, so basically, they basically lifted the whole thing out of the game and put it into the movie.
So the name,
except for the very end of the movie, which we won't really get into. There's movie specific stuff happening in this movie.
Gotcha.
That's not part of the game.
Okay.
Yeah. But the rest of it, it seems like it's just like a direct pull. Like they just took everything that made sense and they just ran with it.
Is the original, is the lore information, like, does it get into the granular of, like, the name of the convict that's in the Iron Lung? Does it get into...
I don't believe so. So, like, because the game and the movie seem to... Like, there's both convicts, yeah. But Simon seems to be the only one that's named, unless I missed them naming him, which I don't think I did. And convict in the game has a bit of a different outcome than Mark Simon character does.
Oh.
It's
is it iffy or is it it's okay?
Well, no, it's more of like I'm not trying to spoil the end of the movie. That's
okay.
Yeah, I was like, I think Sarah's having a stroke over there. I have no idea what the heck that was.
You're doing great.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, Spencer is the intern mental health liaison, so he has to be nice.
I'm a hype man.
Let's go.
But after the episode, you have a conversation with HR.
Okay.
Okay. So there are elements of the lore that actually translate over to the film.
Yeah, because like there's lots of talk during the film about like Filament Station and what happened there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
That's not in the original game, but it is in the update for the game.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because, okay, it sounds like the update to the game changes the original gameplay of the game.
Not really. Because in the original game, you're just going around, you're scanning locations in your tiny sub.
That's pretty much it.
And you're still doing that, but they've added like a few more locations. Like in the movie, Mark finds another sub. That's not in the original game, but it is added into the update. And the update also gives some background information on what these subs even like are.
Gotcha. Okay. So there are strong ties to the lore element.
Incredibly strong ties.
Okay. And mind you, even though there are strong ties to it based on that lore update, the movie is still a very well-written movie. Like, I did not expect this seemingly unordinary kind of video game adaptation to translate into probably one of the better cosmic horror films that we've seen in the last maybe 5 to 10 years. Yeah. And that's saying a lot, seeing as we here have done like a cosmic horror month where we reviewed a few cosmic horror movies over the last probably 20, 30 years. I think I could easily say this one is probably better than Color Out of Space.
Yep. Color Out of Space.
Which we reviewed that. Last October. I feel like there are elements in this story that just really hinge on Mark's performance. And that's what really drives the story forward.
Well, I mean, I would say the whole movie hinges on him.
Yeah.
Because even if you kept the fantastic story, if Mark's not believable as the convict, 100%. The whole thing just falls apart.
No, without a doubt. I agree wholeheartedly. I feel like because he's kind of the linchpin of that, because we know how invested he can be, his performance alone takes this movie's story to a whole nother level. Especially when you're getting into the elements of like him being the convict, him incorporating like the Filament Station situation, and how this movie really delves into the isolation aspect of cosmic horror and the fallout they're in of where they're at in this situation in a sea of blood, you know.
And adding on to that, for Markiplier as our like as our main performer, it has the ability, the believability also lends to the fact that the rig that was aforementioned 9,000 pounds, like with him, I believe in it, he's physically acting too, because it was moving and all that type of stuff. And like, for also story wise, I really appreciated as a horror fan the just execution on the use of you feel like you are stuck in the iron lung with him. And like, you, like, when it's done properly and it's executed well, good storytellers, if they want to include the camera as a character, this movie did that for me. He already has experience in making the camera like a character, i.e. again, the YouTube originals, you're physically, you're playing as like alongside Markiplier. This, if you feel like all his anxious, like his anxiety, his like frustration, anger of I want to, like, I did what you guys asked me. I want to go home. Let me get out. I will, like, in the first act, there's something wrong down here. I did what you guys asked. Just let me out. And then the progression going through, and then the, like, him going insane from the isolation. It really speaks for itself on just, you feel everything with him. Mm-hmm. And especially with his eyes, like, emoting everything, and the use of a good extreme close-up shot, I am a sucker for if it's used right. So yeah,
I agree. Again, the linchpin in this entire performance has got to be Mark's performance, and without not only his performance, but even the cast, the supporting performers in this one that really give compelling performances as well, even if it's just in their vocal performance. You get such a richer experience from him and in watching the movie. And you're right. Like, there's so much physicality. I don't know if Markiplier had a stunt double, but it looked like there was a couple times where he took a few bangers.
He took a few bumps.
Yep. He even went to the hospital because of the blood, I believe.
Got in got in his eyes. He's like, I'm fine, guys. And all of us are like, Mark, are you actually okay? He's like, don't worry about me.
His eye looked
bad. It looked bad.
It looked really bad.
And like, now that I've seen the movie, I understand why that happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that, like, without the context of the movie, you're just like, what the heck happened to you, man?
And that blood was thick.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that stuff was just coating.
Dedication.
There's screenshots out there of like him, promotional photos of him rising out of the blood and whatnot. And he's just coated from head to toe,
which was super effective.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
It lent for itself perfectly on like for the story and just for overall, like, yes.
Kind of talking about the unique aspect of how this movie came to be in theaters is a unique story in itself. We mentioned that the fact that this movie went from 60 theaters to over 1,500 theaters after the initial official trailer release and ticket sale starting. But the fact is, this man ultimately made Hollywood history. Because Markiplier has probably got to be one of the few people who actually took his movie, bypassed the studios, and went directly to the theaters themselves to sell the movie. And the fact is that if you start removing the studios from the whole table conversations, you're cutting out a huge portion of money that gets taken out of your pocket. Because I believe the cut was 50-50, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what he said in one of his live streams.
And that was 50-50 with all the independent theaters.
Yeah, so if he's getting 50% of all those proceeds, you have to wonder how much of that 50% from the theaters is the studio keeping for themselves and giving it to the filmmakers. Hmm. And if that's the case, then why do you need the studios altogether? You know, there's a lot of buzz about this right now, and there's a lot of conversations happening because Markiplier has just proven how disposable the studios can be in those talks with the movie theaters, which is why we joke, but there might be some kind of credibility to the Project Chad happening at the theaters. Cause, you know, truth be told, if I were a lesser person, I probably would have been like, you know what? I don't need to see this movie. Cause that guy just ruined it for me.
Here's the thing. You're forgetting about Disney, and Disney will not like this if this starts becoming a thing.
So, well, Disney uses their own studio. They don't have to market. And in fact, you know, Disney put stipulations on movie theaters.
That's what I was about to get to.
Go ahead.
I was about to say they just have to put stipulations on theaters to be like, hey, if you show these movies that aren't through like such and such, this new cartel of movie studios we're making, you can't show any of our movies.
This new cartel.
That's exactly what they're going to do.
It's pretty much that, because like in early film history, a lot of the early like studios, they were all originally in the East Coast. Mm. And then I think because of Edison and one of his inventions, they all decided, well, we'll be closer to him and we'll go move out to the West Coast. So like a lot of like the big studios, MGM, I think not Warner, like a lot of like the main staple ones are still around, were like kind of like close knit, to so to speak, but like, yeah.
So like there are stipulations. So Disney has done this several times, where they have, as a studio, they require, like, if they're going to sell to a theater, they demand things like a mandatory 4-week minimum run for their movie, higher than average rental fees, where they actually have them, they take 60% of the ticket sales.
That's oddly less than I thought they were taking.
Really?
Well, I thought they were taking 80.
Well, I mean, it's going because they don't have like a distribution studio. So they are.
Wait, are we talking about Iron Lung or Disney?
Disney.
I'm talking about Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're taking directly from. There's no middle person. They're literally, it's them going to the theaters. They're large enough to where they can just go straight to them and nobody's going to say anything.
Which is ironic given the stuff that they were doing to Pixar during the pandemic where they're just like, we don't have any money to give you guys for theater runs. But they do stuff like this.
But the thing is, they have to require theaters to carry their movies for 4 weeks on at least a certain amount of screens, even if the movie's bad.
Yeah, I remember that being a problem for smaller theaters with less screens where they were just forced to like sell all their showtimes for horrible movies because they didn't have enough screens.
Yep. So I think the fact is that if people are going to start recognizing that this model can be pursued and be successful with it, then a lot of the distribution studios, like, they can go away. But then again, you look at like subsidiaries of Disney, other studios who may work for Disney and act on their behalf, but for other entities, if they're not needed anymore, then like you were saying, you know, mafia mob boss Mickey, you know, might come through and, you know, break some legs, whatever.
Oh,
doing.
Boy.
So I don't know if this is something that may become a trend. But if it does, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see.
Do you think this will like be a marker for basically if for the studios?
A marker by Markiplier? Is that what you're trying to get
at? Yes.
Wow.
Wah, wah, wah. Go ahead.
No pun intended, but sure.
Too late.
tell us my train of thought.
Sorry.
Do you think this will be a now I'm trying to find a different word. Not placeholder. Mark. In like film history and moving forward on if we see again, like you said, a trend or rise in more independent filmmakers basically self-distributing and pairing with local small theaters.
See, this really depends on who it is. Yeah. Because if it's just Joe Blow from down the street, no. But if it's someone else, maybe of like, you know, someone who can like at least get enough people to be like, hey, yeah, why isn't this movie in this theater like Mark did? Mm-hmm. That might be a path, but you have to be like big enough to be, you have to be at least Mark big to do it, I think.
Or another notable name would be like if Kevin Smith decided to do that. Like if Kevin Smith is somebody who, if he stated on any of his socials or any of his, you know, circles of influence, like his podcast or whatnot, he says like, I'm going to go take this directly to the theaters. I want them to buy the movie from me only, not through any studio. And I want your guys' support. I'm 100% certain that he can do it.
Yeah.
Now, does that make you a target for other studios to kind of put you on their quote unquote hit list? I believe so. But And by hit list, I don't mean like they're going to take him out and, you know, put him in cement shoes and drop him down.
Go throw him. Mouse plays rough.
Go throw him in the LA River.
You saw those elementary schools.
But I think there is something to say about blackballing people. Mm. And I know that sounds like a very antiquated kind of way of thinking, but look at Brendan Fraser. Brendan Fraser just came back to the forefront after like over 15 years of being absent in Hollywood. Look at people like Terry Crews. Look at people, and mind you, those are for more, you know, difficult situations.
Yeah.
But the fact is, they could essentially blackball these people from ever being able to work in actual Hollywood. Now, people like Kevin Smith, I'm pretty sure he don't care.
Yeah.
He don't give like two. Yes, he doesn't care at all. And he could easily just do that and be like, you know what? Cool. If I end up like not being able to work in Hollywood again, I'll just work in Canada. And I feel like he could do that. But like somebody like Markiplier, who's trying to make a name for himself, which I don't know how much of an impact this is playing on his future for Hollywood or even performing or even, you know, selling future movies. But for anyone else, like, I don't know, you know?
I don't know if there'll be a glass ceiling put basically on.
Well, you have to look at it like this.
Okay.
It's not so much as like, oh, this person broke through the glass ceiling and now everyone can, you know, rise above it as well. The fact is, the truth of it is that the glass ceiling only opens for those who let them pass through. And the truth is, like, they, because there was enough voices behind it, they couldn't help but not have to open it for him, because then there would have been backlash.
Oh, okay. I
personally think, now, mind you, I would love to be proven wrong in every aspect of this. I would love if the fact is Markiplier just literally shattered the glass ceiling on people reaching directly to theaters and making a name for themselves. But then I also feel like the studios or the powers that be who still run Hollywood would find another way to create just an even higher glass ceiling that would make it even more difficult, i.e., they throw in people who try to do the same thing Markiplier did, but as a plant, and they completely like destroy some way of the bridge that was made by other people. And they pretty much create an example out of that person. Like, see, that's why we don't allow, you know, people to go directly to theaters.
Cause we got a bigger budget. So we'll do it. So we have a bigger like pocket.
Or like Spencer mentioned, and he's like, oh, you know, the House of Mouse is going to put stipulations on it. Like, if they're going to put a movie out here, like, oh, if we have a movie out in your theater, you can't have any independent film that's non-studio represented. And they could do that because they have the money.
But with that, do you believe, with backlash from the moviegoers, that we'll see a decrease in corporation movie theaters, and we'll have more of a like people returning and supporting local theaters?
You got to remember, like, the thing with local and independent theaters is that they still have to pay the same amount that the big corporate ones do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you're wanting to see the latest and greatest at your local theater, they're going to have to pay X amount of money in hopes that many people go to their theater to see that movie.
Okay.
That has a stipulation for, like I mentioned with Disney, for 4 weeks straight. And people have to go for 4 weeks straight because they only have X amount of theaters in their local theater. And out of the six theaters that they have, four of them were all being used by this Disney movie. So that means they only have two other theaters that can be used for whatever. And hopefully that brings in enough people to make money.
Okay.
It is unfortunate. Like, again, the system is not made for the Davids of this age, the David and Goliaths.
Mm.
They're made for the Goliath to always easily win. However, that doesn't mean that somebody who abides within both worlds can create the bridge and build something that makes a common ground space for everybody. Who knows? I mean, Kevin, I joke about Kevin Smith, but Kevin Smith is one of those people who absolutely exists in both worlds. And I feel like he's somebody who could easily make that bridge for people and try to make something happen. There's a lot of grassroots independent artists or actors and performers who are advocating for, you know, the rights and the capability of indie artists to be heard and seen. And I think that's coming up more and more as a recognition for the current socio-political climate we're in that exists both not only in the real world, but also in Hollywood and every other, you know, entertainment industry that currently is residing right now. We just had the Super Bowl happen, and Lord knows all the stuff that went on behind the scenes for that, and the chaos that ensued, whether if it's from the presidency and the administration all the way down to Billy Bob Joel, who had to see his Turning Point Super Bowl halftime show.
I just want to kiss my fish.
I know that the system right now doesn't seem like it is working for us, but I also know that there is always a chance to fight for tomorrow. And I believe that other people believe that, and people who are in places of power believe that. And as long as there's belief, and as long as there are people like Markiplier who continue to fight for the opportunity to see his movie be viewed in major theaters, and people like Bad Bunny to be able to go from just being, you know, a busboy or a waiter or whatever he was years ago to not only having album of the year at the Grammys, but being able to perform at the Super Bowl halftime show. You know, I feel like there are still opportunities that tomorrow will bring. And it's people like Bad Bunny, like Kevin Smith or Markiplier, who will continue to bring, you know, bring the sunrise for the next day for the next great independent artist who's going to wow the world with whatever they have to offer.
And also, so, can I add on to that? The Markiplier's him making this movie and the funds that's come through, he's also put back into community, which we've known for years that he cares deeply about his community and the people that like are touched by it. So with Iron Lung, he also was having run, I think for opening week. And if it was near your theater, you could go donate blood. Which is just like kind of ironic, but like it's for a good cause. And the thought and care that was put into it, like, also lends to him being an independent creator and showing that even though he's known as the king of YouTube, well, the king of FNAF, and he's strongly known on YouTube, that still, like, people, plural, matter. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that.
People matter.
Yeah. People matter. We're all humans on this earth.
That's all right. True. Let me go ahead and ask you guys, are there any highlights or issues you guys had with the film? Start with Spencer.
I did not have any issues with the film.
Okay.
We really touched on it, I feel like. Oh, no, I don't really want to talk about. Okay, highlight, set design. You're only really given one space to work with, but it's actually a pretty good space. It's exact replica of what you get in the game, and it looks very fantastic and very tactile. So it looked really good.
There you go. Sarah?
My highlight, shots. I love a good use of any type of camera shot that's used properly. And like I said, an extreme close-up shot or strip, just close-up shot, but specifically extreme close-up shot to emphasize emotion or basically tonality of a film to go, hey, this is what this is like going on, instead of just using a whole bunch of medium shots. Delicious. I second the set design, because again, you're stuck in the Iron Lung with Mark, and like if it wasn't a really good like design, you'd be like, but you feel every creak, every just the atmosphere of the vessel with him, and you're just like, I want to go too. Let us out. What about you? What do you think?
About your thought or about my own? I don't know.
About your own. I finished up mine.
Okay. I don't really have any issues on my end, honestly, for what you get presented. I feel like the expectations hit exactly where I you know, they came to be. And that's not to say it was a bad movie. It's to say that I was more really focused on Markiplier's performance than I was really everything else, and more so impressed with the quality of the production value that he got, that he put into, you know, not only the submarine, but even just the wardrobe, the effects to it. Like, everything seemed really great. I think as far as like a highlight, I would have to say just, I loved how the third act transitioned us from the video game adaptation straight into cosmic horror and created this whole other vibe to this movie that you feel like you know where it's headed. And if you were none the wiser to the video game or whatnot, you feel like you know where it's headed. And then that third act hits and it just descends into madness. So
beautifully so.
But that does bring us to our roundtable question of the evening. Now, with so little shown and so much left to the imagination, let me ask you guys this. Does Iron Lung prove that the scariest horror is what we don't see, or does this movie suffer from its creature ambiguity? So obviously within this movie, we see, you know, there's a depth of depravity kind of aspect of it, but there's also there's a threat also on a physical aspect to this tale. What we don't see it all that much. Do you feel like that hurts the movie, or do you feel like it helped the movie?
I feel generally the better idea is to not show your monster.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Who, for instance. One
I did not think you're going in that direction, but okay.
It's a monster of the week show,
no,
basically.
Hey.
And you see most of them, except for one time in series four, there's an episode called Midnight, uh-huh, where you don't see the monster at all.
Who's the doctor in this one?
That's David Tennant.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the one where they're on the planet made of diamonds.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the most terrifying episodes of that season because you don't see the monster and you don't understand how it works, and it is frightening.
I think that's one of the things that I do have to say. For every season of Doctor Who that I have seen, they really play into the it's what's not seen that is the most frightening. Because there's that episode. There's an episode where there's like there are ghosts in this haunted house that they have to go, and I believe it's the one where they're like
at with Matt Smith.
It might be with Matt Smith.
Okay.
I forget, but like it's things happen when everybody's like outside of the room, and they're like, oh, it draws the tension to it. I think even like the crying angels, the weeping angels, like. That's a huge, like, if you ever look at any of those episodes, they are frightening.
And do you want to know the episode that is like the most disliked out of the Weeping Angels one? Is the one where they showed them moving more. The second they showed more about the movement, people didn't like it.
Yeah, because it takes away from the mystique and the mystery of them. I agree, like, to your point. Again, going back to a reference that's more cinematic.
Hey, listen, I found something and it worked.
I think Jaws is also a great example of this, where Jaws takes from the aspect of people expecting to see, you know, this massive shark or whatnot, and you don't really see the shark until the third act. And that's when, like, the tension builds. But it wasn't due to careful planning. It was because their own animatronic shark didn't work underwater. So, I mean, out of the necessity for making do with what you had, they actually made it work well enough to where you never really saw how big or how monstrous this shark was until you got to the point where it was intended. So, I agree. I think the ambiguity in this movie creates that tension to where you don't know if the bigger monster is the one outside the sub or the one inside the sub. And I think that lends itself, to the creative writing that Mark did. What about you, sir?
I fully agree with both of you guys. The other thing is for cosmic horror, but like just horror in general, the scariest thing to man is the unknown, and keeping your monster or your entity, like, but behind the veil, or just ambiguous enough where you still have just the unease and just the anything can happen and you are not safe, lends to itself really well. Add in the fact that I'm probably wrong, but Mark's thalassophobia, which is the fear of big bodies of water, specifically the ocean, it lends, I think that's how it's pronounced. It also lends to the atmosphere of this film, because you don't know what's at the bottom and you're going through that fear with him too. Again, lending to the set design perfectly.
Does he actually have thalassophobia, or is that just something? Because I know,
vaguely remember him saying that.
I remember him saying that he doesn't like the ocean, but I don't know if it's actually like thalassophobia. I don't recall that he said that he said it exactly that, but I don't know about that one. Yeah.
I know he's scared of mannequins.
Yeah.
I know he's scared of mannequins. I know he loves space. But I know he doesn't like the ocean, even though he played Subnautica to great detail.
Well, he's played games with mannequins too.
Yeah. So I don't think there's like an actual phobia of.
No, but he said he's scared of mannequins. Yeah.
Yes, but he doesn't have a phobia, like a actual phobia. He just doesn't like mannequins.
No. He said he had a fear of mannequins.
You're sure?
I'm fairly certain.
And down in the comment section down below, you can correct if Intern Sarah is wrong and if Filmlosopher Eddie is correct.
Well, anyway, wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, talk about whether or not the film passes or fails, and how many monocles. Let's start with Sarah, because I feel like she's going to say the most.
Oh, okay, thank you. This movie passes for me. I really enjoyed the execution of it. It really lends itself for being a good story and a good film coming from a cinematic point of view. And that also passes strongly as a horror movie for me because I felt unease and it did not waste my time. And with the 2 hours and 5 minute runtime, it felt shorter than that. And that's a good thing. Not as I wanted more time. It just use of time was really well. So I'm going to give it 4 monocles out of 5.
All right. What about you, Spence?
This is a pretty good movie. I had lots of fun. Even though it was a late showing and I was a bit tired, I still was able to, like, the movie kept my attention. And I think it does a really good job of, like, setting the tone for the movie. Just throughout, it's, like, tense and you're not sure what's happening, especially through various parts of it. So I think it just does a great job of, like, you know, being a horror movie that sets, like, a very tense tone. So for me, I think I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. It was really fantastic, and I hope he does more movies.
Interesting. As far as myself, the film does pass. It does have a really great conclusion to the story, albeit maybe not the one everybody else wants, but it still has a great conclusion. As far as the story goes, I feel like, again, Markiplier makes this movie so much more greater than what it originally could have been. And I have to say that if it was anybody else, again, I don't think the movie would have done as well as it could have. I am an avid fan of Markiplier. We're all here are fans of Markiplier, and I feel like this movie is an absolute joy and gem to be able to experience in theaters, and we were so happy that we were able to. I'm going to give this movie a 4 out of 5, and yeah, if it is still in theaters, I suggest you hightail your way over to the theaters to go see it if you can. If it isn't, you're lost.
Oh, but, wait. There's also a physical media release that Markiplier is trying to do, so you can also try to catch that if he executes on that. Yeah.
Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever we are on socials, whether if it's facebook.com/filmlosophers or at Twitter, Instagram, Threads. Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. You can catch all of our great hijinks on all those pages, actually, because they cross-promote, especially at our Instagram page, where you can see Spencer's big score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found in The Only Place That's Ever Lived, which is on Jane Unseen and Jane Unseen Only on Instagram. And hopefully soon we will have to... We're going to have to see that Streaming Is Forever stuff, Spencer.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, we did talk about we're going to give it to the intern. So,
what?
You can also check us out over wherever podcasts are streaming. And that is iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music. You can tune into Your Heart's Desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Philosophers and give us a like or a subscribe and listen in. Tell us what you think. Did you like the movie? Did you get a chance to see the movie? Are you planning to buy the movie? Let us know your thoughts in the tile section down below. We love to read them. We love to hear them. We love to know them. And of course, if you are so inclined to do so, please give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
Yes, we have.
Again, we are huge fans of Markiplier and we applaud his efforts within the theaters and getting his movie out there. And we continue to support him as well as all independent creators as they continue to shine. So keep it going, guys and girls and whomever you may be. And we can't wait to see your creation either on the big screen or out in the real world. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Andrew Sarah.
Class dismissed.